Right.
Okay. Blind leading the something.
Hello, Lee.
G'day again.
When John asked me if I would interview Lee, or someone asked me, it wasn't John, anyway, I thought, I'd really like to do that. And I thought back to when I first met Lee, which was actually on a telephone. It was early 1990. Carol Joyer was very pregnant with Andrew. That's how I know when it was. And I visited West Leederville Church for the first time. A friend of mine, Noel Giblett, had suggested it might be a good place to visit, and I went. And people were talking about this thing called Easter Camp, which was coming up in 2 or 3 weeks, and I was thinking, and someone said to me, oh, you could come, and I thought, no. They said, well, if you're interested, ring this person called Kevin, and this is his number. So I did ring, and the phone was answered by Lee, and she told me all about Easter Camp. You probably haven't remembered that.
Remember nothing.
And little did I know that some years later I would be an elder with Lee and travel through the time of Mount Hawthorne Community Church beginning with Lee. So it's lovely to actually be sitting with her and finding out a bit more of who she is and her life. There will be some time for questions, but I imagine the questions could be endless, so you can carry on over.
Or not.
Or not.
Over a cuppa.
Okay. So you said when talking to the children that you didn't go to church and your parents didn't talk about God and things, but you had a sense of God.
Yeah, that's right. I can't remember ever not thinking that God was there somewhere. It was a sort of very uneducated, basic sense. And it probably wasn't until high school. I went to a church school, so they're on about church stuff a bit there, and you go, what's all that about? And it probably wasn't until mid-teens that I really got it we can talk about that now or later, what happened?
Well,
Or have you got a different question?
No. Well, no, I think we're heading in the same direction. My question was, did you have a becoming a Christian experience?
Yeah. I was invited by one of my school friends to go on an ISCF camp where they explained stuff about Christianity, and it made sense. I thought, this is what I've been waiting for someone to explain what it's all about. And I thought, well, yeah, I can go along with all that. So after that, I started going to a youth group, ironically, at the church where I'd been to Sunday school and not had much fun. But they had a very good youth group. That was Melville Presbyterian at the time, which then became Melville Uniting. Anything else?
No, you can just keep talking until you run out, if you like.
Oh, well, it was from there that I met some people who started coming up to hear Graham Chipps preach at West Leederville Presbyterian. And that's when I really thought, yep, that's where I want to be. Not at Melville Uniting, where the preaching tended to be a bit on the light, fluffy side, but some real stuff about, okay, so now you're a Christian, what are you supposed to do with all that? And that's what Graham was saying, that made a whole lot of sense. And I guess I must have been sort of 18 or 19 at the time, and it's when I met people like Paul, and who else was around at the time? I think a lot of the people have gone that were my fellow refugees from Melville Uniting, but I've hung around.
Someone's pointing, Jenny's pointing at someone.
Margaret? Yes, definitely, and Irene. They were around at the same time.
Yeah. So when you look back over what you can call maybe your faith journey, has that been a smoothish ride or a bumpy ride or a...
Well, I'd say reasonably smooth, if unexciting. I've never lost that. I guess at the very bedrock of who I am, I know that God's there and that somehow He's looking after me. On top of that, there's obviously times, as in everyone's life, where you feel up or down or sideways or something, where it's not all smooth sailing, and you know, you could go on for hours into every detail of that. But I think even, I guess, if I've felt my most unhappy or distressed, I've always known that in the end it would be all right.
So your sense of God and what God is like or who he is or whatever, how has that changed, if it has, over the years?
I don't know that my sense of God has changed, but I think the sense of what I'm supposed to do about that has changed. I remember feeling quite uncomfortable as a teenager at the old youth group, where it was all about you've got to share your, you know, share with others and evangelise and make others become Christians too. And I thought, oh, I was pretty shy and still am really. I didn't want to go and talk to people about God. I thought, what if they don't want to? You know? And there was always that pressure that that's what one ought to do. And I think as I've got older, I've realised that it's more who you are as a whole person. Well, this is how it is for me. Who you are as a whole person, how you act, the kind of things you take on, your morals, I suppose, and how you live them out is much more what people take notice of anyway. And then if some kind of opportunity arises out of that in a natural conversation, you can talk about God. And I think that's... I guess it doesn't happen very often, but, yeah. So I think the sense of God as a loving friend remains and has always been there.
If there were... I mean, it sounds like that sense of God has been a constant and you haven't sort of fallen into valleys of doubt and things like that.
Yeah.
Have there been any... what I called sort of tricky times or difficult times? And
I think I've had a fairly fortunate life in that. I've never had major illnesses. My parents are both still alive. My sister is still alive. You know, she hasn't had... No one's really had major problems in my family. Economically, we've always been, you know, well off. So in that sense, no major traumas. So nothing really, I suppose, to try and shake that bedrock.
So if that's been fairly constant, are there things that have changed, not sort of dramatic or challenging, faith-challenging things, but just in terms of how you live your life as a Christian person, or is it pretty much... You can say no.
I think it very much goes along with the reading that John did from Richard Rohr about becoming more mature and not becoming infatuated with things or influenced so much. And it's just... I guess I'm not striving to achieve things anymore, but rather just let things come. And I'm at a particular stage at the moment where that's very much the case because I'm not working. Last year, many of you would know that I was involved in a business with my sister and we decided to close that business. She's continuing on in a different form, but I'm not working and I'm not looking for a job. This year in particular is Stephanie's year. She's in year 12. I thought, well, I don't want to start anything new then. We'll see how it goes next year, but I can just live with not having ambitions, I suppose.
Now, we know that you loved to run when you were a child. What sort of things at this stage of your life do you love to do?
Well, at a certain age, I decided to give up sport, which I really loved, because I'm very competitive and... I was hurting myself a lot, injuries. So I thought, no. But it doesn't mean I gave up exercise. I still really like to keep fit. But I discovered, I think when I was about 40, which is not very many years ago, I discovered dance. And I did a little bit of dance when I was a lot younger, folk dance in particular, and... I've discovered I really like it, and I've been doing that in a couple of different groups for the last 15 years. Oh, damn. given it away.
Do the sums.
So, in fact, I thought I could really prepare for this talk today and look at the questions Lindy has sent me and give you some answers that you'd appreciate and were deeply thought out. But instead, last night, I went dancing. And it was fun. Yeah.
That's good. So what nourishes you or encourages you spiritually?
Other people, this group in particular. I think if I was in it by myself, I don't know where I'd be. I know salvation is a personal thing and each one of us has his or her relationship with God, but I think we're also in it together, and without that we are much lesser people. And I just love coming here on Sundays and hearing what a whole range of different people have to say. And I love it going to home group, and we have a home group about nothing, but somehow we talk about quite a lot each week, and I love that. And I really draw nourishment from other people, and maybe they do from me, I don't know, but yep, I couldn't do without you lot.
Now, I'm going to drop in a couple of questions without notice, but seeing you were dancing last night anyway and not practicing your answers,
yes, that's right.
What, doesn't really matter. What things trouble you, either within your own life or looking at the world or whatever?
Well, I think when you look at the world, not so much my own life, I can reconcile myself with that, but you look out and I'm not very good at articulating what's wrong with the world. I leave that to other people and they do it so well. But I get terrible feelings when I look at the situation with, for example, refugees in Australia and indeed around the world. You think, but what can be done? It's such an awful thing. And I guess social injustice in general. And I think, oh, I just don't know what I can do about it. But I guess I've learned I can do a small bit. That's partly where Wiggly Woo comes in. Not that it's necessarily fighting social injustice, but it's my contribution to the world. But yeah, I feel very upset and helpless in the face of social injustice and wonder what I can do.
And where does God or prayer or whatever fit in all of that?
Well, sometimes I think that's all you can do, all I feel I can do, and I'm not very good at that. So, but as in the previous answer, seeing other people doing something and maybe giving me a clue as to how I can contribute is very comforting, as well as the ability to pray and knowing that God probably feels much like I do, very upset about the whole deal.
You mentioned Wiggly Woo, so why don't we jump to that now and tell us from the very beginning the story of Wiggly Woo.
Some of you here might remember when a woman called Liz Hansen and her family came to this congregation back in, it was 1999 or 2000, yeah, 99 I think it was, because Wiggly Woo was started by Liz, should I say, that's very cruel. She's New Zealander. And another joke, New Zealand accent. It was then called Jiggle and Jive, which in New Zealand sounds awful. We thought it was about juggling. Anyway, yeah, Juggle and Jive. So she started it, and then after about 6 months said, oh, I'm not in a position to continue, various reasons, which were completely valid. I thought, no, this has got so much potential for this area. So I had a chat to Marita, and she felt the same. And we started it, just like that. And it hasn't looked back. I think we started with one class on a Friday morning, and the first group ever was maybe 10 or 15 people. Then it got bigger. Then we started two classes on a Friday. Then it got bigger. We started one class also on a Tuesday. same story. Now we're doing two on a Tuesday, two on a Friday, and if we ran it every day of the week, I'm sure we'd get the same number of people. But we can't. Don't want to. The money? Oh, yeah, when we started, we thought if we can cover costs, that's our aim. We covered costs and then had a bit left over, so I thought, well, just give it away. So the very first amount we gave away, I think, was a couple of $100 to guide dogs. I can't remember why. Can you remember why it was guide dogs? Some connection there, and we had a lovely woman with her guide dog come along and talk to the kids. This was when we were a very small group. And since then, over 15 years, I think we've given away over $75,000. So, and that is a complete bonus to what we do. We run an activity that does what it says. We provide some kind of entertainment and education for young children, and people pay, now it's $5 a pop, which includes morning tea. And that covers all our costs, and then we give money away. It's wonderful. Complete bonus. And when we tell the people at Wigglyboo that's what we do, they go, oh, really? That's fantastic. It's because it's their money too. They're the ones that turn up every week and pay their money and join in. And yet, $5 at a time, we're changing the world.
My daughter's comment on Wigglyboo, because she's brought Taylor a couple of times, is that it's amazing, and she says, it's ridiculous that there are organisations out there who do other similar sorts of things, and you've got to pay this much money and it's not nearly as good as Wigglyboo.
We're always very careful to point, we never ever disrespect any other things, because Marita and I are in a very privileged position, I'm sure you'd agree, Marita, that we can do it, we don't have to work full time. We are in a position to volunteer our time, and not everyone is in that position. And other businesses run businesses, and that's how they feed their children. So they need to charge more money. Yeah.
Can you give a sort of 1 minute word picture of what it's like here on a Tuesday or Friday morning?
Yes. Well, how many people are in the room now? Or how many chairs have we got set out? About 50? Something like that? We get about 150. That's a big group. People, obviously there's no chairs, but that's a lot of people in this room. Don't read that, maximum. No, we get up to 145 people. Yeah, some of them are very small. Yes. So you can imagine that number, and just that many people in the room is really hot. It gets hot from body heat, and then they start moving. Yeah, so it gets quite chaotic at times, and that's not everyone's cup of tea. There are some people who prefer a much quieter thing with their children, and Wigglyboo is not for them.
Okay, I want to leave time for people to ask questions. Is there anything that you're desperate to say?
No, I do have a piece of music I'd like to play. It's a group that I recently discovered, if you like. Well, they've been around for a while. Stephanie told me about them for a long time, called the May Trio, whom I heard at Fairbridge. Really liked them. Bought the CD, as you do. And there's a song on it that it's either this or another one that they sang at Fairbridge. It's an a cappella one. So perhaps we, bearing in mind that's about 3 minutes, if we can do that maybe at the end of a certain number of, is that okay?
Yep. Yeah, so we'll questions now. Any questions?
There's questions?
Lee, I know that you've done a fair few things in your life, including physio and all sorts of stuff. Can you tell us a bit about how that's come about? Because I think you're the person who's changed what they do the most that I've ever met.
Yeah, I can tell you that wasn't the original plan. I guess I've always sort out, like everyone, you want to find something that you like doing, you're possibly good at doing, and that you want to make a living out of. And I've never really settled down to one thing. It's almost like, well, what do you want to do when you grow up? I don't know. I started potted history. No surprise to you, my first degree was in physical education. And then that sort of seeded into then doing physiotherapy. The two go together pretty well. But at the end of doing physio, I discovered I really hated it. So what do you do? I guess on and off then, I was about 25, 26 at that point. On and off between then and now, I worked in the family business, which was with my father, mother, sister. Then after my parents retired, just with my sister, and that was an antique shop. So absolutely nothing to do with anything else. But yeah, as I say, we closed that last year, so I can't work there anymore. Did that answer your question? Yeah. Some of you here remember we had at one stage a relationship with a church in Indonesia. No one in the congregation spoke Indonesian. And I thought, oh, I'll do that. I quite liked languages when I was at school. Loved Indonesian, loved learning it. And, yeah, I was the person that wrote the letters and did a whole lot of translation. And I thought, oh, maybe I can end up teaching that. So I did a dip ed, as you do. It's only 1 year. Did a little bit of teaching, but then became pregnant with Stephanie, and I wanted to be a stay-at-home mother. So 3 or 4 years later, I thought, I don't want to go and teach after this. So I didn't pursue that either. But nothing's wasted. It's all good. All ended up in Wiggly Woo, I think.
Lee, can I ask a question?
No, thanks, Nona, because that was a question of mine that I totally skipped, so thank you.
Yes, John.
I'm interested in how you met Kevin and how that all
came
about.
One guess. Starts with it. Yes, Peter Oliver gets the jelly bean. Sport. maybe from Kevin's part you might not believe it. We met at the University of Western Australia Volleyball Club. So there you have it.
No, that's not
Went
it.
Went from there.
Just keep going.
Keep going?
Yeah, a little bit more juice, you know.
Next question.
You can talk to Kevin about that later at morning tea, John. That would be a good male bonding experience. There's no juice. Sorry. Hang on, John will get you the microphone.
I was going to ask if it was beach volleyball, but I won't say. Now, I'd just like to...
Beach volleyball had not been invented then.
Anyway, I'd just like to say thank you for every Sunday that you work the sound and set the sound up every single Sunday.
Someone else tends to set it up and I wander in and get the glory for operating the system.
True,
but no problems.
You must enjoy some of it because often when you're mixing, you're dancing. So thank you.
Maybe the dancing's the distraction.
If your 20-year-old self walked into the room, what would she notice most about who you are now?
Apart from the grey hair. My hair was much oranger when I was younger, and some people might remember, Nona remembers that, being a fellow redhead. Are you two sisters? That was always the comment, as if all redheads in the world are related. No, inside, I think I still feel 20. I think a lot of people have said, I don't know what the difference is. I think I'd say to that 20-year-old, don't worry so much. Even if you do not fail at everything, but change things regularly that you are aiming at. That's okay. Don't beat yourself up so much.
Lee, can you talk a little bit about the early days of being an elder and tut-tut, a female elder as well?
A female
back,
elder,
back
yeah.
Back then.
No such thing in the Prezi Church. Oh, yes, there was. I think in my 30s was spent, and into the early 40s I was an elder. I basically remember becoming an elder when Duncan was born. Wasn't ideal, but Graham Chipps encouraged me, said, just do what you can with a new baby. And that was quite hard. But it was a wonderful group of people to meet with. What do we do? Every fortnight? Yeah, Lindy became an elder at the same time, and Mark, and Margaret was an elder. I think that was the group for 10 years. No, we're not the first female elders. No, by any means. It was very common in the Presbyterian Church. They were forerunners of having women as ministers and elders, and then they sort of did a U-turn and decided that that was not biblical anymore. So I guess the first few years were not a problem, Paul. And then the problem started when Graham Chipps, our minister, left the church, and we were exposed, if you like, to the greater Presbyterian Church, which was undergoing this change of not wanting female elders, so or service leaders or ministers or, you know, outside the kitchen. Sorry. yeah, so that was difficult, and it coincided with a number of other things when our church decided to leave and become this church. So that transition time was pretty difficult. But the support of the other elders was, and the congregation as a whole was fantastic. And, I think it was about 12 years all up, 12 or 13 years being an elder, and I think I've done my dash. People keep asking me, and I go, okay. Yeah, this, as I said, this piece of music is by the May Trio, and I find it just lovely. And I thought, I'd really like this to share this with everyone, so enjoy.